Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Sarah Tilt is the executive director of One Montana, under which the Master Hunter Program of Montana is situated. The Master Hunter Program was born out of frustrations of landowners with behavior of hunters and closing essentially the doors. No more door knocking, no more opportunities for leasing, no more opportunities for engagement, no more opportunities for the public to say, hey, can I hunt on your property? The Master Hunter Program decided, let's teach these hunters etiquette, let's teach them the manners that they were taught by their parents and grandparents. And in lieu of that, there are landowners that then believe so much in the program that then will allow access for people to hunt. And also landowners, and I love this component of the program, that landowners that say, yes, come out and work with us, mend fences, put up hay, do whatever. And in reciprocation, there may be an opportunity to hunt on the property. It's a brilliant work ethic. It's a brilliant relationship. Love the program. And so I wanted to dig in a little bit more with Sarah. So enjoy.
So there's a reason why I started Blood Origins. And that reason is simple. Is that I wanted to convey the truth about hunting.
It brings awareness to non-hunters that it's more than just killing animals.
How do I start it? Brittany.
My name.
Does my hair look okay?
It's fantastic.
My name is Mike Axelrod.
Start again.
Yeah, I hated it too.
Braxton, you said something in the car to me. You said that you were living on borrowed time.
There's a perception around who hunters are, what we're supposed to be, and a feminist that works for a nonprofit that is a hunter that has only eaten wild game for the last 20 years is likely not the thing that people think about when it comes to a hunter.
It always does that, access to video. Sarah Tilt, right? I know there's a middle name in there.
No, Sarah Tilt is perfect. The middle name is because I got married so late in life that I had kept it. Otherwise, you know, people wouldn't know who I was.
Yeah, exactly. Sarah Tilt, welcome to the Blood Origins podcast.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me, Robbie.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome. If people don't know who you are, simple introduction to what you do, who you are.
I'm the executive director for a very small nonprofit based in Bozeman, Montana, called One Montana. And we have several programs, and our mission is to sustain a vibrant Montana by connecting our urban and our rural communities. You may know.
And does that mission entail hunting?
The mission itself does not entail hunting, but one of our primary programs that people may have heard of is called the Montana Master Hunter Program, which is focused on connecting and improving relationships between hunters and landowners and educating a better hunter, a more ethical hunter that landowners want to have on their properties.
So it does have hunting. If the Master Hunter Program is under One Montana, then it would be tough to argue that One Montana is not pro-hunting type organization.
Well, we're very much pro-hunting. We're very much pro-landowner and very much pro working lands and private land stewardship, conservation, mm-hmm. All of those things. And the Master Hunter Program meets our mission because it bridges the gap between hunters and landowners and brings those communities together.
Yeah, I was fortunate, as we talked about before, I was fortunate to sort of engage with your Master Hunter Program back in 2019 when we were in Montana, in Missoula, visiting Jana, and she was invited up to just like a little ranch. I think you guys were conducting your course out of that ranch. There was a big shooting course that you guys were undertaking and a bunch of classroom time. And then just a couple of other people that have just come into our circles that overlap. And it's amazing how small the community is. Kate Pate and Matt Gagnon. You guys just came back on the radar. And I was like, oh, man, you know, it is an interesting program. And then the reason I wanted to have this conversation is not from a lack of controversy, but there's a lot of talk, a lot of yelling on social media, a lot of, you know, saying things about, you know, certain companies that are like land trust that are now creating a marketplace for people to engage the private landowner and how that is a detriment to hunting. It's a detriment to hunters. Hunters can't knock on people's doors anymore because all of those doors are essentially locked up already. And so maybe yes and no. What is your opinion? Because I'll give you my opinion instead of just putting you on the spot. My opinion, the idea of door knocking, even before I got into Blood Origins, when I became a hunter, I was 26 at the time. I had just moved to America. This is in the 2006, 2007 area. Even then, and I don't know why I had this impression, or maybe it was because of failed attempts on my part or friends' part or people just talking in the circles, it was very difficult to door knock even then. Like people were like, already had leased their properties out. Leasing had occurred already, or they're working with outfitters, or they just said, no, it's for family and friends only. Your impressions?
Oof. This is such a nuanced conversation. I think, yes, there's a lot of controversy and a lot of challenges with door knocking and trying to access private land. We are what I would say of our program, it's one tool in that toolbox to kind of engage with landowners in a different way. And I think land trust also is a tool. One of the challenges that we've seen here in Montana is we have block management, which I know you're familiar with. And that is essentially a way for a private landowner to get paid for allowing access for hunting on their properties.
Right.
And people are allowed to go. They sign in at a box and then they are allowed to go hunting. But that has caused quite a few challenges because there's not a lot of monitoring within that framework. And many ranchers are deciding to close their gates. And that might mean leaving block management. And it might mean not allowing public hunters on their property any longer. So, but with that block management, I think we've lost the ability to go to landowners. We've We're no longer having to request permission directly. And so that does change the dynamic. Our program, we do a number of different things. We haven't talked in depth about what our program is, but it is a truly education program where we cover everything from the history of conservation to wildlife disease, wildlife management. We have a panel of landowners. We have a day and a half that is focused on shooting instruction and efficiencies and ballistics and all of the things you need to be an effective hunter. And we do that because a lot of landowners are I'll back up. We have learned through surveys and a number of other things that most landowners allow some kind of access. They just may not be allowing it to general public. It may be to friends. It might be family. It might be youth.
Right.
Might be veterans. But our program, we try to teach people about landowner concerns through a full day, 8-hour landowner panel where they have the option to, where they're really talking directly to landowners and learning about the challenges they face and sometimes why they might close their gates. And giving them the skills to be able to knock on doors, because as you say, it is very difficult and it is challenging. But we want people to start to learn that if you understand what landowners face dealing with wildlife management, they're not trying to harbor the animals. They're actually trying to run operations, and sometimes the animals are in the way of that. Oh, I can stop now and, we can talk.
Well, let me ask this then. What was the genesis? Why did you feel like, and maybe it wasn't you, but I'll just say you writ large, One Montana. Why did you feel like a master hunter program was needed?
Well, I think for some of the reasons I just described, we brought together a group in about 2010 that was landowners, hunters, conservation groups, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, sort of anyone who had a vested interest in looking at the challenges with hunters and private landowner relationships. We really
What was the impetus then? What was the impetus, though? Like, why did you decide right at that point, like, we need to get everyone together?
So what kept coming up were what gates being closed and access being closed. The state manages all its wildlife through hunting, and not all of the wildlife, but most of our large big game animals through hunting. And so we wanted to bring everybody together to have these conversations to say, what are some options? What are some things we can be doing? And what kept coming up was hunter behavior as one of the primary reasons that landowners were closing their gates.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that. And so that's what that was the impetus for the meeting.
And then the program was really designed by this group of people that we still have engaged and designed by the initial curriculum was designed by a landowner.
Okay. So when someone goes through a Master Hunter program in Montana, they have to do all these different things. We don't have to get into the details of it, but they do a shooting course, they do classroom courses, whatnot. Why would someone want to do the Montana Master Hunter program?
I think the primary reason is because they're a lifelong learner and they are interested in being part of a community of ethical and effective hunters who are interested in and engaged and want to be part of finding solutions around hunting in the state of Montana. I think there is an access component for sure, but it's limited. We're never going to be, we have 370 graduates at this point, and we have about 350,000 acres that we're able to access for hunting. So not everybody's going to get on that access,
What is the access component?
So we partner with about 25 different landowners that allow some kind of access. And it is sometimes it's a lottery situation where they're allowing a certain number and we run a lottery through our program.
Or
it might be It's different for every landowner. We have some landowners who are managing their lands for age class, so they only want certain animals. And one of the reasons they choose to work with us is so that they can, they know that just those animals will be taken. So it's a, it really is landowner driven. We work with them to figure out their needs and what their goals are, both for their ranch and for their wildlife management goals. And then we develop a hunting program that meets those needs.
What happens if one of your graduates falls off the rails, dare I say? Takes the wrong animal, behavior is wrong. Are they excommunicado?
Not necessarily, but we do take it seriously. So they might be on probation for a year or two. You know, we have had this happen. And in the few cases that it's happened, it's been a pretty honest mistake, but it shouldn't happen.
Sure.
So, but again, those things, they do happen. And in both cases, it was a mistaken identity. So, and they self-reported.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yep.
Sarah, have you been accused of closing doors to door knocking? If the Master Hunter program has 350,000 acres locked up?
We have not, because it's not locked up. So I would say almost all of the landowners we work with offer additional hunting opportunities. Some of them have block management as well, but then they allow our Master Hunters to go in different areas that they don't want the general public in. We really try. Ours is really, as I said, it's landowner driven, and it's really about meeting there. What I would say we get accused of is being a pay-to-play program, which means that because someone has paid to attend our class, they are gaining access, which is, I don't think, entirely true. The cost of our class is very minimal. Think about the value that people are getting and the additional opportunities. The other thing that we do with landowners that's a bit different is when you graduate from the program, you have the opportunity to go work alongside with landowners. We have 25 sort of formal partners in the program who are offering hunting access. We partner with another 20 to 30 landowners to do service projects around the state each year. And often those, while they're not formally in the program, if you volunteer for some of those projects, you'll often get invited back to go hunting. So there are different opportunities that also allow hunters and landowners to build their own relationships. And that's what we're trying to create.
The pay to play, I get it. But then I also, the people who want to pay are the people, they have to go through a class. Okay. They're not just paying for access. They have to go through a class. They have to do all the things. And, at the end of the day, as you said, it's education that's being put in place. So maybe this is a good question. The landowners that you're engaging with, those that are maybe getting out of block management or got out of block management that started this whole idea, what are the behaviors of hunters that maybe you've seen? Maybe it's a multiple part question. One, behaviors that started everything, behaviors that keep occurring from a landowner perspective, the ones that you're addressing in your work. And do new ones keep coming up that you're like, oh, we need to address that in the class? Oh, we need to address that in the class?
Oof. The primary behaviors that really caused us to start thinking about this and develop the program were more basic etiquette things, such as closing gates, not driving roads that you're shouldn't be driving, especially when it's muddy or something like that. There's trespass is a big one. And, you know, I don't know that our program has directly addressed that other than we're creating ambassadors who can do peer-to-peer sort of management of other people's behavior. I mean, that's part of this is how do we extend the reach of this program beyond just the people who will attend it? Because arguably, our graduates are not necessarily the bad actors. And there are others out there that really need this program, but probably won't take it because it's not in their real DNA to want to learn this. So I think there's part of that. I also do think there are new, as the state gets more and more populated, we have more and more people moving here for all the right reasons who want to get out and go hunting, but really don't understand any of the needs that landowners have. Or, you know, I still hear horrendous stories about people leaving gates open and, you know, having cows having just been separated from their mothers and all of that just work going out the window. People don't understand the amount of time that they're impacting these landowners. Or, you know, I've mentioned the roads. We talk a lot about weeds and helping landowners identify weeds. We actually have one landowner we work with who actually requires if you're a master hunter and you come across weeds, you pinpoint them on Onyx, which gets yours with FWP. So new behavior issues, we are seeing a number of them. A lot of it is trash, but I will say that the human waste is becoming more and more of a problem that we didn't see before.
Oh, man. I can imagine that. I can imagine that. It's because you live in this environment, talking to landowners probably all the time, are we seeing more and more landowners getting fed up and saying, I'm done? Or is it just almost like it's the same, it's been about the same last 10 years, 15 years?
Oh, I think there has been a number of closures over the last few years, more recently. And hopefully our program is helping to really question that and try to create better hunters so that it's a constant problem. And, you know, even the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Park has a new program called It's Up to Us. It's really focused on the black management land, but the whole idea is we have got to be better actors and more ethical and really understand that this is private land that you're on, whether you're on black management. And I think we need to promote a better understanding of public land and treat that just as well. I think the issue is not necessarily just about private land. Hunters need to understand what keeps private landowners up at night and the challenges that they face on a day-to-day basis if they want to hunt private land. But the line doesn't stop there. I mean, the same challenges that we have with ethical behavior occur on public land as well.
Do you teach a component in the Master Hunter course about ethical behavior on the property itself is paramount, but also how they engage online. Do you speak to them about, you know, what they're portraying online, what they're saying, what they're showing?
Yes, we do. We have a 3-hour class that is really looking at ethics. It also examines fair chase and that whole module. And then, yes, we have social media has become such an important part of how people are engaging on a much larger way. And so we do talk with them about do's and don'ts and what we'd like to see and what we think should not be put out there.
Yeah, because again, I could see, even though it's not tied to the land itself, but if a farmer X sees X hunter saying, I was on this ranch and look at what I did, and it doesn't look good. Farmer's like, I don't want my name smeared out there.
Yeah.
So I'm out.
No, it's, and you know, we see so many people who are using social media as a platform to really build their notoriety, and not always ethically. We see it in the fishing community as well, hunting, just about anything. So that's, yes, we do. We focus on it in quite a large way. I need Bill in here to give you what he teaches.
The idea of the service project is a very, very unique component of this. Have those landowners just said, no, we just don't want to commit to being fully a part of it? I could almost imagine the landowners being old school, like, you do something for me, I'm going to do something for you kind of scenario.
Yeah, well, that's always been out there. I think, you know, often if you're a hunter, and I would, many hunters that I've talked to over years have lots of stories of their relationships were built on going out and helping put up hay or helping with fencing, small projects around the property. So it's not a new concept. We started doing it during COVID, because we realized so many of our landowners were not getting the seasonal help they needed. So it was really an opportunity to offer help to them. And then we realized the additional benefit was master hunters gaining the ability to work side by side with a landowner and have conversations that you're not going to have otherwise. And so we started really curating those days so that our hunters are coming out. They will usually meet in the morning and have a conversation about the operations of the ranch, and then we'll work. And then during lunch, we might even curate some conversations or just literally allow those to happen. And it's pretty amazing to watch. And the feedback we get from these sessions on how these conversations have changed perspectives is pretty amazing. So I think they've become more and more important, and they allow the hunters to actually build their own relationships with these landowners so that they can, you know, if they have that relationship, they're able to call that landowner up and ask about hunting opportunities. Or can I bring, you know, a lot of our hunters are really interested in becoming mentors for new adult onset hunters. We also, this year, we did a survey, and going into the class for 2023, 9% of the students said they wanted to be hunter education instructors. When they came out, 88% said they wanted to be hunter education instructors as a result of taking this class. So I think those statistics are really important about the kinds of hunters we're educating and where they will.
Yeah, 100%. So if people are listening to this and they're in Montana, maybe that's a better question. Can anyone attend the Montana Master Hunter Program, or is it just limited to Montanans?
Right now, it's just limited to residents and adults over 21.
Okay.
That we hope to change that, but that's the current trend.
Yeah, big plans on trying to expand the program into other states, right?
Yes.
You'd have to get out of under one Montana then. You'd have to figure something else out.
We just need the right partners.
So if someone's listening to this, they're resident of Montana right now, and they're like, oh man, never heard of this, want to get involved. What's on the docket for 2024 that they can maybe get involved in?
Well, the application period is open from October through November 30th of every year. And then it is a pretty competitive application process. And that information can be found on our website, which is mtmasterhunter.com. And you can actually download the application from there and prepare questions before you get online to do it. And we'll review applications in December, and people find out if they're accepted in early January. Classes happen in March, April, and May each year. And we'll be doing classes in Bozeman, Missoula, and Kalispell, Montana this year.
So is that three different classes?
Three different classes.
Okay. Well, we'll just have to make sure this podcast comes out before November the 30th. No pressure. Thanks, Sarah.
Well, that or we talk about next year.
Yeah. Okay. So applications need to be in by November the 30th. If you're a resident of Montana and you want to be a part of the Master Hunter program, how much does it cost for somebody to get if they get accepted?
The cost of the program is $675 per person, and they're receiving a value of about $3,200 per person.
Okay. What is the value based on?
Man?
The value? How'd you base the value?
Based on what they're getting for the program, the value of a single shooting class would be more than $675, for example.
Cool.
So relatively inexpensive for someone who wants to be a lifelong learner and part of the community.
Last question I had here is, how many people join the Master Hunter program that are brand new?
Well, we require 3 years of hunting experience, preferably.
Oh, then none. Then nobody.
And part of the reason for that is to understand the nuances of what we'll be talking about in the program itself. And we have people that come in at all different levels. So we might have someone who is very knowledgeable about conservation, someone who is really an amazing proficient shooter. But when they leave the program, they'll all be at this higher level of knowledge and information when they graduate.
It sounds like you need a new hunter program.
So
that then creates the feeder into the Master Hunter program.
And we actually tried to pilot a 2-day program this past summer and did not get as many participants as we needed to run the class. We would very much like to do that. I think new hunters, I also think there is a need to create something that is for young adults in the sort of 17 to 20 age range who go through their early on hunter education and then are sort of left behind. So either through a formal mentoring program that we do with that age group or some kind of education there. So there's lots of opportunities for growth with this program. We're just trying to figure it all out. And we are a nonprofit, so most of our funding comes from corporations and foundations and generous individuals.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Well, Sarah, it's been a pleasure. I know it's a great program. I think it's needed because of just this idea specifically of hunter behavior on the landscape. And, you know, you've essentially created a reward system. Yes, you have to pay for it. But a reward system that is, you know, we teach you to become a better hunter. We teach you to be, you know, remember the manners that your parents taught you in terms of your etiquette and the way that you treat people and the way that you treat property. And because of that, we have people that trust our process to then be able to have access to hunt. And then even better, in my opinion, maybe even a little better, is that, okay, we've got other people that may not give you the access to hunt, but if you just go do a little bit of work, help them out, they may help you out.
Yep.
So I love it. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Robbie. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, that's it for today. appreciate you listening, as always. Leave a review, share it with your friends, and most importantly, do what's right to convey the truth around hunting.
Oh, that's awesome!
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.